Hello and welcome to Commentary on Fire. Yep, I'm your host, Stuart Sutherland, and joining me this evening, we've got Ken.
Kenneth Wilson, hello.
So, yes, this is going to be our DVD commentary for Scared Stiff, the 1987 flick. You can't really say sci-fi flick, and can't really say action, or it's
You
just has to.
can say a lot, but you can't sum it up in one easy
Sentence.
genre sentence kind of thing.
When actually researching it, there was one site that basically listed it as Chow Yun-Fat needed a payday. This is sort of like the synopsis from a Chow Yun-Fat fan site.
Well-deserved pay, I'll say. We'll get to that. I think I've seen that. Is that the review with the comic like
The
bubbles?
captions, the
Yeah,
caption pictures, yep.
I think it's from the a free man in Hong Kong giant fat website. It's now no longer updated, but I remember that review had like captions on it. He wasn't too big of a fan of that movie, but we are, at least I am.
I could be. I made the window alongst the middle.
Uh-huh.
But the ending's what it's all about.
And we're doing this basically for ourselves and literally maybe only for two of us for our own amusement, but heck, if 10 more enjoys this commentary, then it's well worth it.
Right, so
We are screening it via the Universe DVD, we should be said, not the Joy Sales DVD, although you might be able to follow us and be in sync if you watch the Joy Sales DVD as well. Hopefully they are the same length. You never know that with Hong Kong releases. Some are shorter, some are longer.
Aye. Okay. So, basically the stage we're at the now, if you do have the Universe DVD, we're just on the main menu at the on air option. So the stage before they really used the word play.
I like on air better. It feels like a show.
It's like, fuck, this movie's going live. Yes. But, yeah, I think I want to make sure we get everything out the road before we start and obviously not use any material the now. But basically, actually giving a quick shout out to Born Cinema over at Twitter. Basically, I owed him a favour. It was when posted on Twitter a few weeks ago, I just casually threw up a message saying watching a movie with Tony Leung and Lau Ching Wan and just offered the public to guess. And right enough, he guessed it and thinking there was no prize. So, yes, this is your minute of fame.
And the right answer was, if you didn't mention it.
Oh, yes, Johnny Toe's The Longest Night.
Well, Patrick Yau's The Longest Night, but you can also
Oh,
say
shit!
it's also Johnny Toe's The Longest Night. It's very well known. It's pretty much was Johnny Toe's The Longest Night, but the officially credit to Patrick Yau.
Okay. All right. On with the commentary.
I'm a pedantic motherfucker, sir.
So, if you are ready with us on the Universe DVD at the main menu, I will do the countdown. And of course, the numbers mean nothing. It's all about the click. So, when I say click, you press play. Okay. 3, 2, 1, click. So, right away, here we are seeing the Boho Company logo, symbol, thingy.
Boho Films.
Yes, Elbow. Hi. Cool. Limited. Reportedly, Raymond Chow of like Golden Harvest pulled out of one of Sammo Hung's films after only playing for like 2 weeks in local cinemas. So, I'm guessing this is Sammo wishing for more freedom and control. So, Boho Films was born out of this deal after Golden Harvest still. Wait, aye, Golden Harvest.
Yeah, they still wanted to
Aye,
just
aye.
distribute his films, but still,
Well,
he
aye,
wanted freedom, as
was
you
no
said.
difficulty. Yeah. But see, that's another notable thing about these movies. From all the commentaries we've done so far, well, for the obscure movies we've covered, they always seem to have played really shortly. Like, again, this movie actually only had a theatrical run of 2 weeks.
Well, it's a busy Hong Kong cinema. I think you were lucky to get a few weeks at cinemas sometimes.
I'm pretty. Aye, 12 days actually, and in that time we did earn like over 7 million Hong Kong dollars.
Jeez.
So, yeah, it's not bad, but well, it is actually not bad for 1987 and for 12 days.
And also, it was really not one of the biggest boho movies. I mean, what were some of the other boho movies that came out before and since? Yeah, like Hong Kong 1941, yeah. Long of the Law, Heart of the Dragon. Classics like Mr. Vampire Righting Wrongs. And this.
Of course.
And I call it the black sheep of boho films. Before I go on, I'm going to talk a little bit about Sammo, but this opening scene with Eric Tsang having been wooed by a lady and he's rejected her. She wants him, but he rejects her, and it's kind of a baffling start. I mean, Eric Tsang being desired.
Ah, exactly. You know right away this isn't truth we're seeing here. This is a dream world.
Well, to be honest, like the first time I watched this, I was clearly not paying attention. I thought this was pretty much real, but as it turned out, later on when this scene ends, when he wakes up and we see Mukui, it's essentially a precursor to the later stages of the film, because the subtitles anyway say that, you entered my dream, don't enter my dream again. So it's like almost a precursor, it seems, to Mukui's ESP powers. But I'm not too sure about that. Sometimes subtitles can confuse the hell out of you, but wow, what a start to this boho film that like no other movie like boho did was this kind of way. But I want to talk about Sammo Hung, because he produced it. I don't know to what extent, but he was no new talent in Hong Kong cinema, obviously. And really, this movie does have some incredible versatile and experienced talent on it. It's directed by Lau Garling, Lau Garling's brother. His 12th feature as director, this was. The writer, Roy Zeto, wrote many of the classics we mentioned, like Righting Wrongs, and I believe he did Dangerous Encounter First Kind. We've gotta stop here. I think I recognize someone on the left there still.
I was gonna say it has to be Eric Tsang's birthday if he's gonna get gang raped by Margie Tsang, Sandra and is it Anna Kimiyama? Of course, Sandra being on the far left and Kimmy being in the pink dress. And of course, he's still saying no.
he gotta protect his chastity. So yeah, you're obviously a better viewer than I am, because you've picked up on the fact that this probably is a dream. But I wasn't paying attention the first time. But yeah, Michael Mukui that has his entrance right about now. He was not really the most established movie star as such, but he had been on like TV and been this part of this TVB's Five Tigers of actors on TV series alongside Kent Tong, Felix Wong, Tony Leung Chiu-Hai, and Andy Lau. And Eric Tsang here on the left, he had dabbled like extensively in acting, directing, and even producing at this point. And later on, very later on, in a supporting role, Giant Fat, his stardom was clearly not in question. By 1987, because he had broke with The Better Tomorrow, and but his movie choices is probably questioned depending on the viewer you are. But still, despite all that, this is an odd movie. This is an odd one out of like any Hong Kong cinema. And later on, very later on, you are not going to know beforehand or like 30 minutes before, 40 minutes before, the paths this movie's going to take. So it is going to go down some ESP paths, if you will, and that is said to be kind of lifted, kind of inspired by this 1984 movie called Dreamscape with Dennis Quaid and Max von Sydow. And I've seen parts of it, and it's more lifted from, inspired from, than ripped off, to be honest. So no worry. No worry at all. So, I mean, the viewers are not seeing like the extensive content this movie has yet, but I'm still going to ask you a brief question, because this movie has a lot of violence, a lot of comedy, and a lot of unpredictable elements. And Hong Kong cinema was like that. You had everything in movies sometimes, blood and comedy and rape and music number. So did you ever mind that when watching Hong Kong movies, like when they pulled you in all directions?
I have to say it really. I really think it's films like this and maybe like The Seventh Curse is when I really seen that side of Hong Kong cinema where it went like all directions.
Yeah.
Like, 'cause I was basically brought up with the Kung Fu films and then went into the Triad films, and of course they were all pretty stuck to one thing, but when I started delving a little deeper, I did get pulled in all directions, and it really makes it more memorable. But trying to pitch that product to something else is a little bit challenging.
I think this is one of the more extreme examples, to be honest, because you don't expect the horrible stuff from this scene. And at the end of the movie, it's really funny because during the end credits, they play like different scenes from the movie, and you're like, was the movie like that before? After having witnessed what we're gonna witness. I want to talk a little bit about the director Lau Gawing, and it's. He certainly seemed overshadowed by his brother, you could say, Lau Garlung. But he has had a good career. Worked at Shaw Brothers alongside his brother, action directing. By the way, let's stop.
Robo-san.
Robot Tsang. I dare you, Stu, to say what this has to do with the movie, and I'm going to ask you if you mind it, despite it not having to do anything with the movie.
It's I mean, really, that's one hell of a favor to ask your mate to do.
I mean,
It's
they are crafty sons of bitches, these two. I think that robot has been used a number of times already. You know what I mean? Because he clearly, I don't think so anyway, came up with this the day of the date. I mean, because he has that, he's emulating his voice to be robot-like, that wobbly voice. So he probably has been using that as well a few times. But by the way, what real woman would believe this is a robot?
Exactly.
What the hell is wrong with this woman?
It's the wee crafty nod to each other as well. Like
And you
they're
know what? These are not. That's a bad woman, and these are not good men. They are fucking perverts in this scene. They really are.
It's a flashback to these Twinkle Twinkle Lucky Stars, where they basically fake a fire so Rosamund Kwan could hide in the bathtub, and then given the chance like seven men to ogle her while she's underwater in see-through nighties.
Of course. Tsang is going to get his view at the goodness here, so to say. So Lau Gawing is directing this scene. He worked on like the Heroic Ones and The Water Margin, who was directed by Chang Chien, and one of the action directors was his brother Lau Garlung. And but he I think Jesus Christ.
See, this is where I'm expecting the smoke to come out the helmet.
Like a steamboat kind of thing. His crowning achievement as an action director, Lau Gawing, early on is, of course, The King Boxer.
Right, yeah.
Because that lit up the screens not only in America when this was screened. This was like the first kung fu movie to be screened in America and cinemas, but it lit up Hong Kong screens, I think, as well. Because I can't think of many movies that were like King Boxer at that time. I mean, it felt so different. It felt so creative. But that's just me. I mean, but it's a great movie despite. And moving on, like in his career, he can be seen in Warriors 2. Many people who can be seen in Warriors 2, directed by Sammo. He's the Ming rebel at the beginning of the 36 Chamber of Shaolin that Gordon Liu admires. He's also paired up with Sammo in Odd Couple, which a movie Lau Gawing directed. That's available in the UK, I believe. He's has a great fight.
Wrong channel, wrong channel.
It's a thrusting motion, that the robot thrusting motion that says
See,
a
that's obviously the function if she doesn't stay the night. He's got to use that one instead.
You're very right that this is a track back to the Black Stars movie, because Eric Tsang was obviously part of that horny gang too. And it's evident even in that How to Meet the Lucky Stars that they did in 96, they're as horny as ever. And they snap into it like that, you know what I mean? Lao Gawain's like finest fight scene, I think, is against his brother in Le Legendary Weapons of China. That major end scene where they use like, I don't know if it's 12 or 13 weapons, but they use each weapon is identified on screen. And even when they go hand to hand, they identify it as a technique, as something. So, I mean, Legendary Weapons of China. It's a very funny movie too. Great classic made in 82. Lao Gawain was also the director in 1982 of this Cinema City movie, Till Death Do We Scare. And I'm gonna stop that because we cut to the car here with the robbers.
Like suddenly cuts to a Ringo Lam movie.
Good point. I mean, and I expect this out of Hong Kong cinema. Why not add some robbers, an action scene with a lot of squibs and horrible violence, a relentless gore. Why not while you're at it? And there's nothing like the power of 80s Hong Kong action to me, because in this scene, even though it's short, it's a basic car chase, it seems, basic shooting. I just like the power of that time, the grit of that time. You know what I mean? Ringo Lam being an excellent example of the gritty street violence you can get out of like gunplay action cinema out of Hong Kong. And it's just incredible, great. And this scene has something to do with the movie. And I mean, wow. And it's not much, but I like the inclusion of it now that I know of the movie. I can see the movie a lot more clear and see that this scene. I don't know. I like it. It's an 80s factor. Some great camera work and great angles and just a good piece of energy.
Was flashy for the time.
Yeah, exactly. And they with very little resources, you would think also, you know, no elaborate budget or camera rigs, but they still managed to get some great shots here in the car chase. Till Death Do We Scare by Lao Gawain, done at Cinema City, and this is a slapstick horror movie. Kind of thing, very frantic and silly, and it also has this fun finale during the Ghost Festival where it's set all in like papier mâché surroundings, you know, because they burn sacrifices and gifts for the dead, and it's set in one such surrounding, so it's like a paper finale, and that movie is notable because it brought in the famous makeup artist Tom Savini, who had done Dawn of the Dead by that point, and for George Romero, and that great movie Martin, and he's like his best achievement in that movie is, you know, the actor Wong Ching, Wong Ching, this guy with a large smile, he has a wide smile, and he does a makeup with him as a ghost where he stretches his mouth even wider, so it's like they got him to be on board with that, so. Going to the hospital now, slowly up different plots, a totally different plot to a robot movie that we had a few minutes ago.
Now some bad wigs.
A bad 80s haircut.
Possibly.
A final note on Lao Gawain, his work as director, it wasn't as active as the 90s and 80s went on, but a trivia note for people who doesn't know, Wong Fei Hung is actually Lao Gawain's father's great grandmaster. And as with his brother, Lao Gawain was in some of the, or one of the old black and white Quan Ta Hing movies. Among other things, he played a tail during the lion dance sequence in one of these many movies. So it's kind of fun to have a track back to a real life legendary mythical character like Wong Fei Hung. So, wow. I marvel at the movie because I know what's gonna come, even later on. You know, this never happened in Dreamscape. This like it was always established that Dennis Quaid had these powers, but he had run away to try and get away from the experiment. In his adult years, they brought him back. So it's not like there was a scene where he was in a car accident. At least not at the beginning. Maybe there's a flashback later on in the film. But not at the beginning, like we have here. So it's not a lift and copy, scene by scene copy. You know what I mean? the guy who plays the cop, I gotta mention him because I think he's really funny. This is like it's asshole cop. Because he basically sets up Eric Tsang later on in the lineup, in the police lineup, where he thinks he fools Eric Tsang that it's one-way glass, basically two-way glass, and the robbers have seen who's identified them. What an asshole thing to do! But Alan Chan, I only remember him from one movie. It's like in one of these sorcery movies, devil sorcery, black magic kind of movies, which I find fun. These very low budget movies, but I think this is a wonderful little performance against Eric Tsang. I don't know if you remember this, but there's a thing in the subtitles again mentioned that they may just be bullshitting, but Eric Tsang is mentioning that he's like designed a doll that didn't sell well. So maybe again, like there's a logic in the robot scene because Eric Tsang is a designer, but they don't elaborate on this, so I can't say for sure that it is what I just described.
Mm-hmm.
It might be me looking for logic in the movie. But this is a familiar face, a guy with a mustache, but I can't place him. I know I've seen
Tam Chung Heng.
Right, that then I thought of someone else. I know someone with a mustache in many movies has like an English type name, a Western type name. And not ever a Chinese name, so he might be a Westerner, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's a great scene here, but where it leads up to the police lineup. I think such an asshole thing to do towards poor Eric Tsang, because...
Mm-hmm. And it's the way they've gotten kitted up. It gives me the impression that it was supposed to be like maybe Mickey Wai's younger brother was like 15, but instead they opted for a 30-year-old man. Because it just looks like children's costumes. The primary colours, baseball caps.
And him sounding like the way it does, Eric Tsang. The high voice.
It's like that scene where Winners and Sinners and Richard Dunn believes he's invisible. Eric Tsang believes he's like a teenage boy. But everyone else sees the truth.
Why? Richard thinking he's invisible. That's comic gold on paper.
Mm-hmm.
That's wow. While we're in this scene, because I've spoken a bit about it, if you have nothing to add, I want to speak of Sammo as a producer. Even though you know we know Sammo Hung's influence on everything ranging from King Hu's movies, Golden Harvest movies, and working with Jack Chan and Yung Bu. But I think his producing skills aren't mentioned enough. And even though he was maybe producer in name only on some films, you know, only put his name on it, like Raymond Chow. I don't think he oversaw every production his name was on. I want to mention a few that I really like that he produced. The Dead and the Deadly.
Yes. Yeah.
Wu Ma, he stars in that.
Aye.
Very amusing horror comedy with Sammo acts as a papier-mâché doll in one scene. Sherry Chung tries to reclaim Sammo's soul by interacting with animation.
Mm-hmm.
The finale, and of course, as we've mentioned a bunch of times, Lam Ching Ying as the oldest Taoist master in the world.
Because how else you think? Is like, all right, how could Lam Ching Ying play that character any differently? Just make him really fucking old.
Wheel him out every time.
Aye, really crippling old. The fact that he can't move and he needs carried from one side to the other.
predates Mr. Vampire as well. So
exactly.
I like having that before. Mm-hmm. He established his fish out of water presence in Mr. Vampire. He's awkward. He was kick ass doing the things he knows, but when he didn't know anything, it's really fun as this fish out of water gag. He didn't know how to drink coffee properly and stuff like that. That great scene in Mr. Vampire with him and Ricky Hui.
Okay. Yeah.
But Dead of the Deadly is great, directed by Wu Ma, and Long Arm of the Law, directed by Johnny Mack, is this. I love this. It's a fantastic, like, also predates mainly Ringo Lam's and Kirk Wong's style of filmmaking, I would say. Not really John Woo. And the first movie is really great, and I am sad to... it was four movies in Long of the Law series, unconnected. Long of the Law, Saga 2, Part 3, and then Underground Express was the fourth one.
Mm-hmm.
But Johnny Mack, I wished had directed more times rather than his brother Michael Mack, who I don't think is as talented.
Mm.
Mr. Vampire, of course, he produced and really oversaw like these trends as well in Hong Kong. He brought out the likes of Lam Ching Ying, made him break, and in a genre movie, Mr. Vampire, that combined the comedy and the ghost horror, Hong Kong style horror. It was the ultimate attempt that worked.
Mm-hmm.
Spiritual Boxer tried it, Lau Galung. Encounters of the Spooky Kind tried it, Sammo Hung's film,
mm-hmm.
which is great classic, but Mr. Vampire made it explode. And there's tons of characters that Sammo had made successful. And later on, as the 80s went away, the Sammo output got less and less. He produced movies at Bojong Films. Pedicab Driver, Pantyhose Hero, Slickers vs. Killers, and the last of them was the questionable Don't Give a Damn
mm-hmm.
with Yung Biu and Takeshi Kaneshiro in black people makeup.
Oh, Lord.
Oops. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
It's an endurance test. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm just saying, it's like watching scenes like this where hospital staff are physically like poking and pushing the boy boot. Just
it's really a bit.
You want your friend to live? Cry, bitch, cry.
I wonder if that's the Cantonese translation. I wish it was. You know, Michael Mew Qi, lying dead here, or is about to be reanimated. I was about to say, is about to be resuscitated. He was like originally a furniture making apprentice, but like many Hong Kong personas out of the entertainment industry, he joined TVB, a training program at TVB. Ringo Lam even joined that as an actor initially, but graduated to director eventually. And Michael Mew again became part of the like Five Tigers at TVB with Ken Tong, Felix Wong, Tony Leung, and Andy Lau, and they were like the popular actors at TVB and made series either altogether or only a few actors were in a few particular series, like Legend of the Condor Heroes, which I think is on DVD nowadays, subtitled.
Wu Feng just peered in here.
Yeah, I'll get back to Mike MUQI.
I think for me, Wu Feng was always one of those notable actors. Well, he was always a notable side actor, and he never really had like enough presence to be like a lead actor. Well, for the movies I've seen him in.
Yeah, probably in his younger days, he was more of a lead actor, more handsome.
Yeah, but most notable, really, in like the 80s, it has to be Mr. Vampire 2, where he played the role as the father of the children that took in the stray vampire.
Ah, yeah, you're right. I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm. And I think he was known for directing like a handful of movies over the 70s as well.
Mm-hmm.
But most recently, he was obviously known for his last appearance on the silver screen in Adrian Kwok's 6 AM.
Right, one of those, I believe.
Is it The Boys? No.
Oh, it might be, I don't know.
I think it's like that Stevie Chung and other twat, whatever.
they're no giant fat, those people. Or Andy Laos.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right, I remember Wu Feng. Again, he appeared briefly in movies, and to me, when I thought about him, he always played inspectors a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Like
Inspector Wear Skirts, Haunted Cop Shop, Operation Pink Squad. Always Inspector Wu or Inspector Fong. And I kind of like that. He wasn't funny at all times, even though he was trying to be crazy funny. I don't know. It's a comforting feeling when watching 80s Hong Kong cinema. Yay, this guy's in it. This woman's in it.
It's always one of these great comforts when you watch Hong Kong cinema and you do see all the familiar faces, and then you're like overwhelmed with movies like The Banquet and Millionaire's Express.
Oh, yeah. It was what's really bad but fun to watch everyone in it.
Mm-hmm.
This experiment, by the way, I'm not too sure that he had a say in it, Mukiwai's character.
Mm-hmm.
He's just into the experiment now, wearing his virtual reality goggles.
Yeah, which just basically looks like an alarm clock and some scuba gear.
And it moves fast too. I think there's a lot of continuity errors in this movie. I think it's on 5 minutes in some of the next shots here, but maybe time has passed.
Mm-hmm.
But By the way, it always helps when actors have the same name in films as they have in real life. Because I
Yeah.
think Eric Tsang is Tsang Xiaowei, which is essentially his, Tsang Chiowai is his Chinese name in reality. But they have different the English name, and Yuki Wai's character is called David, and Eric Tsang's character is called Hallie. In the English subtitles, I don't think they pronounce that in Kanto. But we'll get back to Mew QY a little bit because he's trying to focus on who?
Someone far more important.
Yeah. For now, anyway. Emily Chu Boyi. Do you remember her from any movies in the 80s?
I'm sorry, I have to correct you. The very lovely Emily Chu. Yes. Let's see. A Better Tomorrow. She was. Wait. Could I? I was just. I'm going to murder right away and say get her mistaken for some other chick. But no. She did play Leslie Cheung's partner in A Better Tomorrow, wasn't
Yeah, one and
it?
two.
One and two. Yep.
Really, one of those faces that only stay for a little while on the scene. It's like, but she's part of some classics. Aside from those two, she's Alex Mann's partner in Rouge. She's part of the couple that meets Anita Moy's ghost in Rouge. And she's really good in that. And I liked her alongside Kent Cheng in Wong Chung's, Shaw Brothers actor Wong Chung's directed Vampire's Breakfast. Also, if you see like the movie Ghostly Love on like VCD with a Category 3 rating and see that Emily Chu is in it, she's not in on that action. It's clearly one of those movies where they shot a lot of stuff, you know, the fleshy stuff, if you will, was shot with. And everyone else, and Emily Chu was in it occasionally, but she gets top billing, I think, in that film. So no luck there, folks. No luck there, guys.
But I am scanning over her filmography now, and it looks like maybe the last few appearances in her career kind of went a little dodgy. Like she did star in like brilliant films like A Better Tomorrow. I could have swore she was in Double, not Double Dragon, Twin Dragons, but I might be mistaken.
I don't remember from that.
Heart of the Dragon, Heart of the Dragon,
All right,
because she was pretty was. Anyway, if her last couple films were also known as Angel or Whore. And Visa to
Right
Hell.
fucking on.
I could see why she kind of stopped after just only being in the business for a decade.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. A
Probably
lot of
marriage.
exactly that's what happens to a lot of Hong Kong ladies. They do usually find. I am cruel enough to say their meal ticket out.
Yeah, I mean, it happens, and the man usually doesn't want their woman to work in that regard. And if you're lucky, you've had a great career and end on a high note. Veronica Yip is one such example, I think. She started in like Category 3 movies like Pretty Woman and Take Me. That's a great title. But she like developed into this great actress and ended on a high note, I think, with some very very good performances. And it all has to do with this scene. Mew QI trying to get into Emily Chu's panties. It's the reason he's in this experiment, isn't it?
Yep. Again, it's the fucking horny dogs.
Yeah.
It's just.
An echo of a lot of Hong Kong, 80s Hong Kong cinema shenanigans. But not an echo of what's going on later in the film. This is. Can you still imagine that this film turns incredibly violent? No! No! This movie's not so supposed to turn into that! Yes, it is. Wow.
It's because again, this is the scene where you're watching. It's like this could easily like you're waiting for fucking Sammo Hung and Richard Doom all to run in the new. It's like, come on, gang, let's do this.
And that Lucky Stars theme playing as well, that familiar Lucky Stars theme. This is essentially the study is what Dreamscape was essentially. The study we're not seeing it properly now, we're seeing it in the later dream scene with Wu Ma. That's essentially what Dreamscape is, if you want to pinpoint specifically something they took from that, because again, this has nothing to do with Dreamscape. This is very uniquely Hong Kong. Going back a little bit to going back a little bit to MuQI, his early career. Again, talking about the Five Tigers, they actually got reunited with each other.
Just no hurry.
nice underpants there. They got reunited sans Tony Leung Chiu-wai in this 2007 Triad movie called Brothers. Kind of an average movie. But again, Michael MuQI was quite known as a businessman. He actually once invested in a company manufacturing and selling glasses, and worked with that sort of his business alongside his movie credits, which is what you had to do in Hong Kong in the 80s, I think. Make sure you have a career outside of the movie one and TV one, because it's not going to last forever. And Chow Yun-fat is always an example of that, because he worked and 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 worked. And one day it might dry up. And yeah, the latter half of the 90s did dry up insanely. But Chow Yun-fat was gone by that point.
Yeah.
But some great films with MuQI. He's in a fantastic Shaw Brothers movie called Men from the Gutter, a modern action film. At Hero of Tomorrow, he made a movie late 80s, quite a standout in the huge canon of heroic bloodshed movies. Talk about great design here, by the way.
I know, you got the love of these real 80 movies for just the varied technology, where it's just like colourful Christmas lights and all these fucking cords. It's like that in films like Flight of the Navigator, where it just looks... Sure, like half a dozen monitors, like that could either pass off for someone's basement or like a computer headquarters, as long as there's enough lights and cables, multicolored string.
Wu Ma on screen, in the other bed here.
Who's of course like who's not heard of Wu Ma? This man's been around for it all. I think he's going on 68 this year.
Yeah,
and the man still doesn't look any older.
No. Like,
for his last appearance, I think it was, well, last appearance I noticed him in was House of Fury, which was a good 5 years ago.
Yeah,
but he has appeared in other things more recently. I think he was actually in, he was in Battle of Wits, and he's now made appearance in 14 Blades.
Right, okay. Yeah, I like Wu Ma. I believe Bay Logan described it as his face turned into this. It looked like an apple left out in the sun. The older he got, but it worked well for him because he got to play a character actor essentially. By the way, I want to single out the transition here into Dreamland, I bet that's stolen from Dreamscape, but it isn't. I actually think it's rather cool. It feels like a Terry Gilliam like. Fantasy sequence. It reminded me a lot of Brazil.
I really expected Yin Bu and Mang Hoi to fly past and like zoo warriors get up.
Hello. That would be a great like tie-in. Wow. But it is a dream sequence, you know. So anything goes.
Yeah.
Even though it's like a Dracula, they're hunting a Dracula creature, and that wasn't uncommon in Hong Kong horror movies. Lam Ching Ying faced off against essentially Dracula in Vampire vs. Vampire.
Exactly.
Which was great first movie for Lam Ching Ying to direct, and it showed he was really in love with the genre and his character.
I think Wu Ma is really, like, for most people, will be well known for his role in A Chinese Ghost Story.
Oh, yeah.
As, like, that great Taoist priest.
Rapping Taoist priest.
Exactly, yeah, he has that one number in the forest.
I think he's voiced, though, at least in that song number, by James Wong.
Right.
The late, great James Wong, who probably did the score as well. I think he did the score alongside Romeo Diaz, the great Chinese ghost score.
Or that, some other people might remember him for his role as the human clock in Meals and Wheels.
I don't remember that.
Where he was basically one of the mental patients when Yin Bu and Jackie visited their father.
I love Wu Ma. He's He's been quite active as a filmmaker early on in his career. He studied on the Chang'e, I believe.
Aye, because he did do some work for Shaw Brothers as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Co-directed a few
Aye,
films with
aye.
Chang'e. Among other things, I probably a lot of classics, but I only remember Naval Commando, so sort of Latter Day one. It's good fun. Also, like he on his own early on in the career, he directed this very rare movie, Deaf and Mute Heroine, which is kind of cool because it's a gritty like Wuxia movie. They're fighting mud in certain scenes and stuff like that. But Dead of the Deadly, he directed also, still one of his better movies.
He's always got that memorable scene where he's pretending to be a corpse, and was it not Sammo was trying to nick his teeth?
Yeah, something like that. Sam actually goes into Wu Ma takes over Sammo's body in the Dead of the Deadly.
Right.
One of these shenanigans that they possess each other willingly, kind of a thing.
But I would just love that great shot where they're yanked on the teeth, and all you notice was Wu Ma's still face and a single tear running down his cheek.
This
Well, there's a camera angle.
yeah, here we go. I
Forget about the
don't.
police officer on the bike.
I thought I should have recognized this woman, but it kind of first. Oh, look at that! That's Fung Bobo. It's not. It's clearly not Fung Bobo. But it kind of looked like that first. But I don't think she has that bosom or would willingly appear sexy like that, like a sexy vampire in her during this point in her career. It's a creative little thing with the blood types. There's no affinity between us, or kind of wonderful subtitle, which probably makes sense. I don't know the word affinity, to be honest, but so Brian Kirby, you can't do that Hong Kong subtitle. I think that's a correct subtitle. Let's see here. Final mention of Wu Ma. One of his other movies that I really like that he directed is My Cousin the Ghost.
Oh, yeah.
With Richard Mann himself, I believe. Kenny B is in it as well.
Aye,
I liked it because it had like quite above
that's a great
average
gag.
OAAB.
There's no escape.
I like My Cousin the Ghost actually because it has kind of good special effects for an 80s Hong Kong movie. He's in Hong Kong 1941 as well as this former Peking opera actor turned vicious village leader. He like tortures people by putting firecrackers in their ears and letting them blow up. That's really like fucking vicious.
It is, isn't it?
That's
It's. But yeah, comeuppance, definitely.
yeah, absolutely a great movie, Hong Kong 1941. Tough to take. It's not the most kind of movies, but really well made, underrated. Also available in the UK on the Hong Kong Legends label, or at least was. Because that DVD might be out of print now.
It probably would be now, but yeah, go on. eBay's probably still got it
Yeah.
floating about somewhere.
Yeah. It's going on a little bit about Michael Mukiwai, for finishing my notes on him. Other than Hero of Tomorrow that I mentioned, the Hero Who Wrote Bloodshed movie that he did, he also was in this movie called News Attack, which was this fairly mature look at the life of news reporters. And he also has a crucial supporting role in Andrew Cam's mean and violent Fatal Termination, which is this movie where Mike Abbott is holding this little girl out of a car, out of a speeding car. Dangling over ground, and Moon Lee is on the hood trying to save her daughter. That's Fatal Termination, a very mean and violent movie. And Michael Mukiwai meets a mean demise as well.
Oh, well, there has actually been quite a lot of talk about it on the forum lately,
Yeah.
and of course I have. Yeah, I think you showed me that scene from the movie, and that is like that's vicious. That's
Yeah. But
like it's
but
something else.
it's nothing compared to what Philip Coffey does in that movie, which I won't reveal because it's downright fucking shocking, that movie, to be honest. But it's great. It's a great movie. Later performances by Maggie Mukiwai. He was in this Eric Tsang supported independent shot on video drama called, out of all things, When Beckham Met Owen. And it is connected to David Beckham and Michael Owen, but it's about kids who likes these soccer players. But it's also about like a kid finding out he's gay, essentially.
Right, yeah, I remember that one now.
It's very, very good. And the latest film I think I saw him in was the Marco Mack directed triad thriller, cop thriller, Woohoo,
Oh, yeah, right enough.
with the massive undercover cops plot, essentially, the massive amount of undercover cop plot.
He wasn't by any chance in the flick, was it? Brothers?
Yeah, he was
With
in that.
Angelou.
Yeah, exactly. He was the lead in that, played a triad boss, played Ethan Chan's brother, so see,
Right.
elder brother, and he's grown into his looks as well. He looks good, I think. Could be a heavy nowadays, a little bit more easier. And this is still like one of the many handsome 80s profiles. This is a long dream sequence, though.
It is. It's really one of these things you expect to be 3 minutes, but it suddenly turns into a Ricky Lyle movie.
And this is the thing, I don't know if you agree on this, that this movie doesn't have to be great all the way through, and you can certainly say that pacing issues, this scene has pacing issues, and a lot of other scenes has pacing issues, but that is funny. But it's that thing with Hong Kong cinema, especially 80s, that it doesn't have to be great to be classic.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure the Winners and Sinners and Lucky Stars movies, they're great occasionally.
But of course they do suffer for everything where like in the middle it does get a little slow.
So then I thought,
There is a great scene later on where it is Michael Mew jumping out of the dream and he's met with, of course, a man we'll talk about later on. I'll reference that scene then, but man, it is like this movie is trippy.
It's a wonderful montage coming up with because he wants out of the experiment, and there's
It's
a
sort of like
montage.
a love hate montage.
Exactly. I don't want to do it now. I want to do it because there's a slight promise that he will get some action on Emily Chu. And there's like three or four cuts. Like, I don't want to do it. Get me out of here. I'm never doing it again. Never, ever, 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 ever. And then he has dinner, for instance, and then he's back, and then he's out. So he's a gullible. He's a gullible one.
I give up forever.
Come on, I beg you. Okay. And it's a feeble mind here, but what's coming up is this shameless excuse for a love scene, a steamy love scene with panties being slowly pulled down.
Yeah, that was like one of those scenes like, whoa, that's damn, the bare hell no one walks in during I'm watching this.
That's not going to talk about that as much yet, but it's one of the, it comes with a twist, though, but it's still shameless, still very, very shameless. I don't know. I want to start talking a little bit about Eric Tang, Zhang Chiwei, and I'm going to bring up a quote I read on the View from the Brooklyn Bridge website. So, start of the quote: "The idea that one day the Hong Kong International Film Festival would honor Eric Tsang by choosing him as filmmaking focus in 2008 would have sounded totally bizarre back in the 80s, as if it was an announcement from a parallel dimension. You mean that funny-looking guy with the short, rotund body, the mortar-sized and shaped head, and an infantile laugh? Yeah. To most of us," still quoting, "he registered only as a frantically eye-popping comedic actor who appeared to be just barely on the plus side of mental retardation." But it would be true. It would be true because Eric Tsang has done a lot of things to earn him that honor, a lot of honor. But we'll get back to that. Here's the cruise. Here's the filter, you know, the foggy filter movie. And what's dee 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 dee.
It's like this fuck, like smooth electric keyboard.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like a deleted scene from like Raped by an Angel 7.
Done pre-category 3 craze.
It was really one of those moments that, right, she's gonna slap him. Like, wait, then you realize like this is his dream is like, oh Christ, this is like this movie does go in all directions.
Yeah. But I like
This scene could be rated.
I like the twist though, because it's
Smoke.
okay, guys, smoke machine. You know, all these distracting things when you're shooting a movie, which, of course, they didn't shoot sync sound for this, so they could have whatever sound going on, loud sound of the film camera going around. But yeah, the twist is fun though, but it's still shameless that Mukiwai willingly or unwillingly like invades her dream. And there's a great reaction shot of Emily's soon here. I'm gonna wait for it because it looks. I don't know. Does it go on for much longer? Does it go any steamier? I don't remember this properly. A lot of sweat.
It is one of these things like, Jesus, how could I commentate this scene and not come off sounding perverted? So I think for the meantime, I will just keep going. Pound, wow, wow,
wow, boom, saxophone in the background.
We're just waiting for some guy with sunglasses to lean in.
Yeah.
But this is pretty much going on full on.
And it's pacing issues as well, because it clearly goes on. Here we go. And she's obviously massaging herself. Yes, yes. But look at that reaction. Yeah, she deserves a slap as well. I think she's going to get that, I think. I want to make a reference to Charlie Cho, by the way. Charlie would gladly, and he was gladly in movies where he had like out of body experiences, willingly just to fuck, devil of rape, and all this like hunting evil spirit movie that he did. Charlie Cho in his tighty whities walking around, possessing other people just to fuck. That's good stuff.
I always feel sorry for Eric Tsang's character.
It really goes. Again, Alan Chan's asshole cop is like behind all this.
The guy just wants to rent some videos.
Porn VCDs, maybe.
Now he's getting his ass kicked by triads.
He does pretty well defending himself, I think, though. Which is, you know, a little bit of good character trait. But I'm going to talk a little bit about Eric Tsang before I talk about this scene in the garage. He played football originally, but he needed some extra cash. So he went into the movie industry, trying out as a stunt man, but more or less was a background performer in movies like Challenge of the Masters and Iron Fisted Monk. You could be seeing a young Eric Tsang looking exactly the same. But he started getting like writing gigs, editing gigs on like 36 Chamber of Shaolin.
I like you can't get your face any more pressed against that window, man.
you got to be a pervert at any moment too. Enter the Fat Dragon he also helped out on the script for, and in 1979 Eric Tsang directed the first of two martial arts classics that he directed. A young Eric Tsang, first was The Challenger, this great martial arts classic with David Chang, Norman Chu, Philip Ko. It's just fun, and actually fun. The loot is a lot better that he made afterwards, but two of the most intense movies in terms of martial arts action, The Loot and The Challenger. If you have the sound on for this scene in the garage where he's being chased, I like that the score starts and stops. As soon as he runs, essentially the score starts and then it stops. Essentially, it's actually timed kind of after his running, which is almost a sign of creativity, because they normally didn't put like thoughts into queuing up the score like that. Normally they just queued up whatever music they could find at the house of the composer, whatever stolen music, and I bet this has a lot of stolen music, but I'm not good at recognizing that. That's Brian Kirby's job. And it's a break in this scene where the movie, I think the change for the movie truly takes place when the demise of the cop here that scares away the triads comes.
This is where it kind of slips into what the fuck. This is where it takes a step away from sci-fi movie and like serial killer territory.
From sci-fi movie to robot thrusting motion movie to
To
fucking that.
that. Jesus Christ.
And it's like a Dario Argento moment that, or
Oh.
any scene from Italian murder mysteries, like is a ride out of like Bird with the crystal plumage, with the always the kill always was dressed like that kind of and had gloves on. Where you also had that in Dario Argento movies, and Tenebrae is a good example too. But those movies, you knew that was the main focus of the movie. You're fucking lying if you could predict this, viewer. Talking to you, viewers.
See, I really wish in the sense, I'm talking about this film in the sense that try not to spoil it for people, because I think when people do see this for like the first time, maybe like the YouTube audience, because I don't see many people openly going out to buy this movie where sorry, that's just a great shot where the killer's sitting on the roof of the car.
And I don't
But
care if we're spoiling it for people because
no, but it's just this the killer is like, obviously when you buy it, it's like someone's face is prominently shown, plastered all over it, and then you're watching the movie and it's like, wait, isn't Hengli supposed to be in this? And then it's really hard to keep that veil over people's eyes when you're not knowing that the killer is actually Chow Yun-fat.
Well, it's hard too because even in that out of focus background shot with him sitting on the car, that's clearly giant fat because I don't know. I think it
It's
is
the
because he's.
filmest scene altogether. You, like my Margaret guessed it. It's like she obviously she never saw it. She came in when I was in the middle of watching this, and she's like, "Wait, is that's Chow Yun-fat?" And like I'm just like, "Oh no, it's not. Just wait, just wait. That not yet. It's not him yet."
You
And
can't.
of course, another like these would have been the selling points if you tried to pitch this movie originally. Anita Moy and Chow Yun-fat.
And I mean, it's clearly giant fat. They don't hide it very well. That's the
No.
fucking thing. Even that out of focus shot in the background of him in the, on the car, it just oozes cool and presence with giant fat way to me anyway. It's like, but his true entrance, I guess, in a suit I think he wore on the set of Why Me, where he played a social worker. It was the year before, but I wouldn't be surprised if that was the movie giant fat walked from. To here. Because it's the same suit, kind of.
But man, of course, Chow Yun-fat is like, well, to many, the main point you would look into this movie in the first place if you were trying to cover your ground when it came to Chow Yun-fat, and of course Philip Coe standing beside him here. Like, it's like, oh, you're looking, it's like, man, this is the good guys. Why the fuck in that trailer where they're being getting their asses handed to them by like a junkyard?
Poor,
But
poor giant fat.
that's I definitely we really need to do the commentary on just the trailer as well. It really pitches a completely different movie.
It does. That's a sponsor of the movie, I believe, where Mewtwo Air
I
was
was
reading
going to say right there.
the clock company. And they really rushed out the clock company logos and stuff like that during the end credits of the Hong Kong movies. They barely ended before like Casio logo all over the screen. But you can't get any bigger than Chow Yun-fat during this period, yeah.
See, actually going back to a point where you mentioned product placement in like the movies, in this movie, how we had the watches there. One of the most bizarre things I saw when watching the credits for Jackie Chan's Little Big Soldier. One of the big, because of course when it comes to credits for companies, it's the company logo that's bang in the middle. So amongst all these Chinese credit, there is a full color logo for Red Bull. It's like, wait, in like a period, like where's the product placement of this? It's not going to be like the fucking wine jar and it's got the fucking the two bulls clashing swords on the side of it going, I think I'm ready to fight now, boss.
Finishing up a little bit on Eric Tsang because he's exiting the movie. He's eventually exiting the movie. Eventually, he joins Cinema City after like the Ultimate Challenger, directed Aces Go Places, the first one, I believe, maybe the second. The great modern action comedy with Kalmaka, Sam Hui, and Sylvia Cheung.
And he does make a cameo appearance in the second one as a, I think he was either the driver or someone that got stood up on a date.
Right, exactly. And
And he's got no shame in the sense where he doesn't mind being like the lovable loser or just the loser.
exactly. Cinema City, of course, the great studio Cinema City that eventually brought movies like A Better Tomorrow to the screen. But initially it was like modern day fun comedies. It's also known that Eric was the director of the first reel of Arm of God, essentially Arm of God, the scene set in Yugoslavia. But for whatever reason, Eric didn't return, couldn't return by the time Jack was healthy again after his accident. But also the main theme of Eric Chang's career as the 80s went on is him supporting new talent. Even like he formed Alan and Eric Films along with Alan Tam and Teddy Robin Kwan, and they made like produced movies like The Other Half and The Other Half. Like, there's some great shots here.
It's like key points flashing by.
Yeah, Precursor in slow motion. But The Other Half and The Other Half, he produced and appeared in Clara Law's first movie. He also David Lamb's Women's Prison he was behind, and also of course appeared in with Alan Tam in Alan and Eric Hello and Goodbye, which is Eric Zhang's turning point as a dramatic actor.
Fucking no witnesses.
Yep,
this dude's vicious.
And all because they took some heroin. These cops. That's essentially it. But he's going to town with it, Chiang Fat. It doesn't have to make sense. It's just it is odd. Chiang Fat as a killer this late in his career. That is cool. Furthermore, on Eric Zhang, he co-founded UFO, United Filmmakers Organization, and worked on movies such as appeared in movies that, like Yes to You, Yes to Me, Yesterday. He won an award for Peter Chan's Comrades Almost a Love Story, Best Supporting Actor. He plays this triad that takes care of Maggie Jung, a kind triad with the Mickey Mouse tattoo on his back.
Yeah, yeah.
He was great in that Peter Chan movie Free Going Home, the short movie for the first free compilation of horror movies, horror shorts. Infernal Affairs, of course. Many people, I think, saw him in that and were floored.
Aye.
This guy is vicious. This guy can sound like that and still be.
He isn't really just a man child. He's he's something else.
From the star of Infernal Affairs, get stiff. He has a great one scene cameo in Ivy Ho's Claustrophobia as well. He plays the family doctor of Karina Lamb's character, and also supported When Beckham Met Owen. Also supported the Pie Dog, the Derek Kwok movie, and appeared in a great hairpiece in that movie.
I was going to say that. That was a movie of many wigs, wasn't it?
But yeah, I mean, Chiang Fat, did you like see a lot of movies with him initially, or did you mostly encounter like the Jackie Chan Bruce Lee movies initially?
It was really the Jackie Chan and Bruce Lee flicks. And it was like, then after discovering Hong Kong Legends and then seeing trailers to the other movies, I think it was really The Killer was the first Chow Yun Fat flick for me. Like buying it second hand, and then just by that time I was buying like Hong Kong movies to review them instantly. I was at that stage where it was like any movie I bought was like for the website, the progress, and
yeah,
it was like, right, I'll buy that and like, and watch it, and it's one of these things where I was actually at the stage where I'd watched the movie with a notepad so I could take notes throughout.
Yeah.
I wasn't watching the movie to watch the movie, I was watching it for a review.
Yeah.
But it kind of, like, I stopped writing and just watched that flick. It was pretty insane.
Yeah. Were you floored by his kind of presence and cool and...
Definitely. It was one of these things where, like, you hear it, oh, nah. I'm not really into, like, the gun stuff. It's like, it's martial arts, that's the cool stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't care about gunfight. That's just probably all Hollywood stuff.
Yeah.
And then you see that, it's like it's your jaw drops.
Yeah. It really does. Stuff. He made that impression on people and still makes that.
Could that be a movie reference right there? A poster for Nightmare on Elm Street, where people's getting killed in their dreams.
I've never noticed that. That's pretty clever.
That, because it has to be.
Sam Raimi and Wes Craven did that back and forth referencing in their movies. In Evil Dead, there's a torn poster of the Hills of Eyes, and they did that a few more times, but I bet they didn't know Lau Garwing as well. But they, he didn't get a reference back, I believe. They didn't put the poster of Scared Stiff in, like, Darkman or what have you.
It'll get, if anything, it would have easily could have been films like King Boxer. Like, that was the films that made it over there.
Yeah, exactly. But I doubt they knew of Lau Garwing. They just knew maybe more of Lolita than anything else.
Yeah.
And we're chatting about, for me, he was the guy that I saw mostly.
This is insane for some poor wee bastard going through.
Yeah. Still some good stunt work, and we'll talk a little bit about Yung Hwa, who was the co-action director or action director on the film. And here's the reveal, if you didn't know it, you're a fucking retard. If
there's the fucking brilliant shot of the movie.
The trailer ends on that, I believe.
He's like, what did you see, Mr. Mao? It's like...
And you know what, the trailer ends on that. The trailer basically reveals everything. Essentially,
it's that fucking cold, icy smile of like a 6-time Best Actor award.
Well, it's great to have this performance versus a lot of the classics. And you know what? My experience at the beginning with Chiang Fat, I saw a few of the Made in Hong Kong tape releases, and Chiang Fat seemed to be in every one of those, even though I only bought like 5 or 6 initially. But I got such an appreciation for him as part of the gangster genre. City on Fire, Rich and Famous, and Tragic Hero, even like standard stuff.
Mm-hmm. And that's the funny thing, because like those movies and Scared Stiff is actually like one of 11 movies Chow Yun-Fat done in 1987. Like, this, it really was like his prestigious year, in the sense like he had done films such as An Autumn's Tale, City on Fire, A Better Tomorrow 2, and of course Prison on Fire.
Yeah, my god, what a year. I think that in 88 is his prime years, essentially.
Exactly. It's like, if you really did have to focus on any years, like, this is the prime candidates, and you can't miss out Scared Stiff amongst that.
And 88, that's essentially his camp year, I think. Because at least Diary of a Big Man, was either 87 or 88, but Diary of a Big Man and Eighth Happiness, that's like Chiang Fat camping it up, and he's such a force. He's like a tornado in those films.
It is one of the things, like, oh my lord. It's like, if you're watching, if you're doing a Chow Yun-Fat double bill with City on Fire and Eighth Happiness, it's...
and that's the kind of thing I like about... I think he's been quoted after doing a speech at a university or college or whatever, that you have to find whatever work you can. And it certainly is true for Chow Yun-Fat's career. He found whatever work he could, and Scared Stiff, yeah, it's a payday, it's a well-earned, easily earned paycheck, but you know what, I like that it sticks out in his filmography, because there was nothing like this in Chiang Fat's filmography at this point. In his early filmography, this was evident. He did like that movie Pursuit, a very early, very bad movie by Wong Tin Lam, written by Wong Jing, where he plays a killer with glasses, kind of a hitman. Mm-hmm. And it's nothing. It's absolutely nothing. But
I think it's really one of these films where it's like, he had to have liked this film. Because like, it looks like it would be such a fun role to play. Like, from everything else he'd done that year, this must have been fun.
Yeah, and actors like that. They like when they can sink their teeth into something. And boy, does he ever sink his teeth into that. Mm-hmm. And, an example of...
it's like, how? Wait... Forget continuity. Yeah. Just enjoy.
Exactly. Stuart Ong here in the bed. Stuart Ong, people may recognize from Hong Kong 1941.
It's one of those subtitle things like, get up, sisters, it's time for work. Like, whoa.
Uh-oh.
Mind blowing.
No wonder he gets killed. Don't fuck your sister! an example of Chiang Fat.
Don't eat the fucking wedding cake.
Snack.
Ah, slab of cake all day, bro.
Yeah, on a sharp knife.
Yeah, he's like, I'll just lick it off this knife. Oh yes, this way, of course.
Oh my god.
pointing will do it. That'll fix everything.
And this is a shocking moment. To be honest, it's not just. It has a gore moment. It's a gore.
It is. It's one of these. It is one of those moments where my partner's like, "What?" It's like, "What the fuck?" And he's like,
I know.
"Giant fire is fucking evil."
I know.
It's like, ah.
But you know what, the example of why Giant Fat is such a great workhorse and a great example of if you put your mind to it, if you work a lot, then it sort of will pay off and you will gain respect. They released a movie in 87 or 88 when he broke called Goodbye, My Friend. It was called that during the re-release. A movie he shot in Thailand at least 8 years earlier. And he went in and dubbed his voice because they did a new Cantonese track for it. And he went in and dubbed his voice. He dubs his voice was Scared Stiff as well. And I like that because it takes time to schedule like a quick dubbing job as well.
See, this is the worst wake-up call ever. I mean, come on. I usually like a cup of tea,
A
like a
samurai.
samurai sword poking me in the arse.
It's a weak samurai sword because what does Kaifat do? He slices that in half or two pieces with his little tiny knife.
But I think we should probably still mention Anita Moy for a while she is, because I don't think she survives this encounter.
No, she doesn't.
Of course, Anita Moy is like one of the greatest female Hong Kong actresses there was. She did pass away in December 2003.
Yeah, it
Of
was New Year's Eve or 30th of December, I think.
it was of cervical cancer, but she'd only like announced publicly in September, so like it was came to a shock that it was that sudden she passed.
It's a cap to a really tough year in Hong Kong. SARS, Leslie Cheung's suicide, and Anita Moy at the end of the year.
But she definitely left some memorable performances in such movies as like Drunken Master 2, where she plays Jackie's mother.
She's extremely funny in that movie.
It's brilliant, that one scene where Jackie's fighting after the thugs steal the handbag, and she does she know like run up and jump catches the bag and then just kind of like sorts her dress, like keeps her modesty, like.
It's one of those Jackie shots that if Lau Garlong wasn't directing that shot, it was Jackie doing like 500 takes just to get that right.
Aye.
But it's all worth it. He's very funny, and the Asian Madonna, she's always called, and
Aye.
I guess that connects more to her singing career than anything else,
Exactly.
as she's probably been looking quite different from year to year, from month to month, or day to day. But I never heard too much of her music, but she had a wonderful deep voice, though.
Aye.
Her theme from A Better Tomorrow 3, that closes the film. That film is really great and just a wonderful voice. But I'm kind of sad that it doesn't get enough mention. It is considered a classic, but I'm kind of sad it doesn't get mentioned more and it doesn't get a classic treatment on like a Criterion DVD or something. And it's Stanley Kwan's Rouge.
Aye. It's one of those films I've never even gotten around to seeing either, but it is the movie to mention when it comes to actresses like Anita Moy.
Yeah, she plays this ghost that's still walking the land of the living because she makes a suicide pact with Leslie Cheung early in the film, and she hasn't reincarnated with him. She's still looking for him, and she turns up in modern day. And
Right.
it's really atmospheric. It's a wonderful film. Can't say enough about it. It really deserves a commentary on its own. Greatest Stanley Kwan movie ever, made in 1987 and produced by Jackie Chan. So you have it like Jackie's producing skills. But this is his Yuen Wah. And there's Anita Moy. Bye bye. And you know what? It's not unexpected either to have Anita Moy turn up in a small role like this. She never did anything akin to it as such, where she turns up for 5 minutes and then gets killed off. But I'm not surprised that she did turn up because there were so many players in 80s Hong Kong cinema that they're available. Can you come over? Yeah, sure. What do you want me to do? Get killed? Okay. I have two other movies this afternoon, so make it quick. Here's Yuen Wah. There's the knife. Okay, see you guys.
I was going to say, it's like, can't do too much today. I've got a concert at 7.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not it's a role that's beneath her, but it's still, you know, it's wonderful to have as well. That comforting feeling we talked about when talking about Wu Fung. It's like, cool, I need the noise in it. She gets killed. Yeah, why not? That's cool too.
It's funny because it's always one of those things nowadays when people complain about like Hong Kong cinema slowed down dramatically. But yeah, you have to think in the sense is like, what the fuck were they on for the fact that they were doing so much movies in the 80s? Is
How
like,
could they I mean the working pace must have been insane, yeah.
because nowadays is like, right, four films could come off as quite a lot to do in 1 year. Chow Yun-fat was in 11. It's like Adekun if this cast and crew were just laced up with like speed just to
It's something.
like it's like no I can't sleep, I've got three more cameo appearances before I could like even think about sleeping tonight.
And they had multiple careers, not only jobs, but most of these were singers too.
Like
Tours.
television shows,
Yeah.
I of course tours,
Promotion, everything. I mean, okay, they don't do like Hollywood style promotion where they sit in a hotel for 2 days and do interviews as such, but because you never had that in Hong Kong, I think. But still, I mean, even Chow Yun-fat did some music. some comedy music, the classic Diary of a Big Man song called, I guess, Very Nice.
That's not the one that goes very nice.
That's the one. That's
Oh, it's the only one I can remember
it's one of those.
for
It's
a reason.
it's great. It's him, Salieh, and Joey Wong in this musical number in the film. That actually is not a song underneath the movie. It's a musical number in the middle of the film. Very nice.
That was just this great presence by Philip Coe there, just like that stance at the end of the hall.
I'm a good guy, I
But
promise.
that's like enough to make anyone freeze in their steps. Like, we know you're fucking evil to the core. Look at you. And he
What do you
is
think
like,
of Philip Coe?
really one of those actors who, from the movies I've seen, he never lasts any longer than 5 to 10 minutes. Like in Dragons Forever, shot dead. Twinkle Twinkle Lucky Stars gets his ass kicked. And like in the same year as this movie, like Philip like got his ass carved up by Sammo Hung in Eastern Condors.
Yeah.
So he is just like he is a guy that gets about, but like the dude's got this. I reckon like he doesn't last long.
But when he gets a chance to chew on something, he does. And again, Fatal Termination, he plays the bad guy in that.
Right.
Oh my God, I won't say what he does, but it's heinous. And it's not him holding out that little girl at in the car, that's Mike Abbott, but Philip Coe tops that. Jesus Christ. But I like it. He's a terrific on-screen fighter when he gets a chance to fight for more extended periods of time. Again, I recommend to you The Loot and The Challenger, both now available on Joycell's DVD.
Right.
And but so he tried to be like a comedic actor at times, but he never fit that because some people were just born to play baddies, and Philip Coe was that. He tried. It worked in The Loot a little bit because that was a kind of quirky, witty movie, and it worked. But movies like Two for the Road, also known as Fearless Dragons, that just doesn't work. He needs to be a baddie. He has these eyes, these beady eyes, and that works for him. But he's actually good as a dramatic actor in another Shaw Brothers movie, Brothers from the Walled City. Directed by Nam Nai Choi, who did Men from the Gutter with Michael Mukwai, Seventh Curse, Story of Ricky, The Cat, this great director, Her Vengeance. And he plays opposite Chin Siu Ho in Brothers from the Walled City, and it's pretty decent dramatic performance from Philip Coe. He emotes very well, actually, very naturally. But he's kind of also known for doing low budget, crappy Filipino productions, and it's true, of course, but his earlier stages as a director is much, much better. He made more Hong Kong movies at the earlier stages in his career. Final Run from like 88, 89 is this all-star action extravaganza, which means that even like people like Simon Yam gets killed off quite quickly. He is not the star of that film. And so it's kind of who is the star, who will be the star? It's kind of that game. But that's a great movie. Francis is in it, one of his earlier roles, 80s roles. Also, Killer's Romance, who with Simon Yam and Joey Wong, was shot in England, and it's this take on pretty decent take on. That's a great intake, also.
Like you could tell the poor lad got dropped on his head.
But Killer's Romance is this decent take on the Crying Freeman story, which was also made into that movie with Mark the cast goes later on in the 90s. And also it's a manga, I believe. And Simon Yam was the crying Freeman, I guess.
But I have noticed that this movie does have these great, like, first person shots, where it is like deliberately someone walking towards like either unsuspecting victims, like how we had Chow Yun-fat entering Anita Moy's apartment, and then we just had the same shot here, but it turns out to be Emily Chu.
It was more surprising now, though, compared to Chow Yun-fat.
You're expecting like a hand with a wee dagger just to come into the corner of the shot, just slowly dicing up and down as it got closer, like with the jawless music suddenly coming in.
Final note on Philip Coffey. He's actually part of the IFD stable of players, which was fun. He was in the like reshot footage, the ninja footage. He was in the reshot footage with Richard Harrison that they edited into other movies. So he's actually... He faces off against Richard Harrison in Majestic Thunderbolt. Majestic Thunderbolt! As the trailer says. Here we go. A little piece of violence. More violence. And it's tense now. It's dangerous.
It is.
And it's not corny dangerous, cheesy dangerous. It's actually very... That's a great shot of Chow Yun-fat with the... it's highly lethal. And remember the robot thrusting motion? That was in this movie. Yeah, someone getting... it's not too bad of a stunt, I guess. Maybe.
He's not laughing anymore.
And it's for once an Eric Zhang high-pitched performance of pain. You know, he's actually in pain. He's incredibly... You know, now he recognizes Mu QI. It's not Eric Zhang walking about being horny and laughing. Mm-hmm. And having that voice. What happens to Emily Chu's character? Does she get killed in this scene, or does she just disappear?
I think possibly they just leave her behind.
Yeah, and it's the Motley Crue, Chow Yun-fat, Philip Coe, and Yun Wah.
She just lies there on the road. There's gonna be the shot with everyone driving away, then a bus just going over her.
And she. No, I think she's out of the movie by this point.
Yeah, I think that might be it. That's insane.
And there's no, like, the cops arriving at the end of the movie either. So, But again, a final note on Philip Coffey. He might have been in, like, the IFD footage that they shot, but he was also sometimes, at least on one occasion anyway, in the movies that they acquired and cut Richard Harrison into. So he was both in the new footage and in the original movies, which was kind of amusing. No one else was that, because they didn't have, like, Ken Cheng or Alex Mann at hand at IFD to shoot new scenes to match the movie that they were in like 10 years ago. But wow, here we go.
I know. Don't you just feel like this great thing when there's this wide shot of a huge like scrapyard filled with cars, like, shit, something's bad is going to happen here.
And then it's for once not a warehouse finale with a lot of empty cardboard boxes. This is rife with opportunities, and boy does Yun Wah orchestrate something. The action department here.
Looks like they did even lost a tooth.
Look at Chow Yun-fat's facial expressions here with his mouth, like, I'll get that guy.
He's snarling basically. He's like,
Shoo-way.
If he can't look any more evil, well, let's just stretch this face a little more.
But see how much we can get into Yun Wah's career, but I'll briefly go through with this. Acrobatic extraordinaire, double for Bruce Lee. Of course, he worked a little bit at Shaw Brothers as director. But he's, of course, known for working with Sammo a lot more. Coming into his own, playing a bad villain, Eastern Condors, Dragons Forever, Iceman Comet.
This is just really well put together.
It is. And it
does get to the point where it's just becoming violent, like... Mukey Wise throwing caution into the wind, like punching the gun out of Velko's hand, just like he's pissed now. Like we're getting to see his angry side, but like Chow Yun-fat standing there with a gun pile, you've not got that many chance. Like the fucking cat's lives are running thin.
Oh. And it's for once like a role that Yung-Wa doesn't chew scenery in. It's one of those more reduced roles. It's not like he's in Kondo's Dragons Forever, Iceman Comet like chewing. But it's also more akin to like On the Run in a way, because On the Run was this very violent noir type thriller. I think Yung-Wa gets his hands cut off or something. Really violent. And so it's great to see this side of Yung-Wa's action directing too, that he was capable of putting together something that you said, something really well put together. Wow, here's a It Hurts, yeah. This is gonna hurt. It's incredibly shocking, this piece of violence. And again, remember the point we... Oh, remember the point we were in at the early in the movie?
The fucking sex robot. Yeah. Now being fucking mercy killed in a car park.
Look at... Oh.
It's... like... Has Chow Yun-Fat done in been in any movie where he's been any harsher?
No, I don't think
so. I've never seen films like that. Triads Inside Story, they're films you'd expect to be dark, but like, God, this is dark. This is like very dark for Chow Yun-Fat.
Oh my, oh yeah, and Lau Gawing makes sure he gets like he gets like some incredible good close-ups of Chow Yun-Fat and the gun almost as big as him. But the funny side to Yung-Wa could be, oh my God, this is tragic. The funny side to Yung-Wa can be seen in Legend of the Dragon with Steven Chow, where he plays his stern. Look at this shot. This is a great shot of the trio. Yeah, get him, boys. But so he plays a legend, Steven Chow's stoic father, who was a double for Bruce Lee. So they make a real life connection. And jumping ahead to Kung Fu Hustle, of course, he got a great, great comeback vehicle in Steven Chow's Kung Fu Hustle that was viewed by international audiences. And Dragon Tiger Gate, of course, he played a baddie in that, yeah?
Yeah. Wait, no. He was basically like the old teacher.
Oh, right. Sorry about that. But wow. I love this wind shot, if you will, because he's so active. It's all
the fucking place comes to life.
Yeah, they actually managed to create a force of some sort, and the cars are flapping about.
I do like that shot where it's Mewky White, and then in the background there's this clear shot of a field where the cows are like nothing's wrong with them. They're just looking across, and there's like a tornado in a fucking junkyard.
It's controlled, ESP, sir.
Yeah, the man's got range. Some great gag. Well, not gag, fucking execution.
Oh, bye. I think Philip Coe gets a better death here because it's gory too.
It is. It's so sinister. And it's like that shot where you can't escape. Of course you'll be fucking...
Oh, I'm going to get you now. I'm going to get you. Now.
it's the blood. And it's still going. It's a horror movie now. It's no longer...
And it's violence dodgy. Also that's seemingly not censored. A lot of it is still in this movie. Even like him shooting off Eric Tsang's hand. That is... Even if it was a few frames trimmed out of that, the effect is there. And it's a lot still, and many frames still left of that. Very well put together gag. I mean, I don't think Yung-Wa was solely responsible for the car stunts and stuff, but the vision of at least two people, Lau Gawing and Yung-Wa,
on top of each other is insane.
Yeah.
In fact, it's like, it gives the impression of bouncing on tires, but surely there must have been some structure in the middle.
Yeah, they actually used the environment they found had here. It wasn't just a standing environment. This environment will move. This will move. And here's like, the trailer has many of these shots with Chow Yun-Fat, but not Mewky Wai.
So you think fucking Chow Yun-Fat's getting haunted by cars.
And you haven't seen that in movies in the middle of Chow Yun-Fat's stardom either. And not before either. And there's a lot of... like, again, on the theme of well put together, as you correctly pointed out, is a very well done mix of stunt men, Chow Yun-Fat, and also dummies.
Yeah, it's... I just feel sorry for these poor bastards. Like, it's how many times could this kind of avoid, like, narrowly being mauled by a car? And it isn't CG. It's before those days. It's
Yeah.
there is cars flying at these people, and basically it's like, do you want to eat food today? Well, you're going to have to fucking dodge this car if you want to feed your family.
And correct and very and Giant Fat is very active despite. It's not like he's oh that was a great dummy shot by the way when the car hit him. I looked at that two, three times and it doesn't really look cheesy.
It's that roll of the car as well. It's like if that dude's timing was any off, and
It's
they'd be in the memory at the end of this movie.
yeah. It's just an incredible turning point for a movie. Another incredible one because you've been floored by the initial murder of Giant Bats that he performs, but it just continues to floor you and floor you. And here's my favorite scene of the whole movie: Giant Bat crushed by two cars, and another. It's a great dumb shot, but is it enough? And another, and another, more, and another.
It's like that scene at Winners and Sinners all again, like the fucking traffic build up. It's really
It's,
what
I
the
mean, you are so spot on. This is an incredibly well put together sequence, and a movie that people will have a hard time accepting because it does so much, so much. Few Hong Kong movies were this busy, but I don't think I've seen anything like that. I was floored the second time I saw it yesterday. That
It's
it's golden age of Hong Kong cinema, and it's a movie that still is forgotten, unfortunately. And here's the montage of the great friendship that ended, the great
the
friendship
happy
with
moments.
the robot thrusting, set to this very downbeat end credit song. And I don't think the clock sponsor appeared as early as I thought initially. I thought it appeared more early in the credits, if it even appeared at all, actually. I might confuse it with a lot of other movies that have, that like has clock commercial at the very start of the credits. But yeah, do you like it still? Do you like the movie as a movie?
Yeah, it's like this is probably the fourth time of me watching it now, and I mean really it's you can't really get bored with this movie because it's like half a dozen movies in one.
Yeah. Well, you can at a few points be bored, but still, because the pacing is off a few times. But still, it's I'm personally that kind of viewer that can. I find entertainment level in movies surprising me, even though it doesn't logically make sense to have comedy and violence this grave against each other. So that's my thought of it all, and I think it's a downright classic. Lao Gaoing, I salute you.
Fuck,
And we salute
it's
you, Mr. Stuntman, as well. Righto. We're done. What? Oh, what can I do now? Does the subtitle say so?
Man, they left Emily Chu behind.
There
No one in their right mind. No one.
we go.